right now, your company's database might be lying to you.
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time.
And you know, the crazy part is it's lying by perfectly following the exact rules you gave it. Have you ever looked at a data report that seemed just a little too good to be true?
Like finding out you somehow have 110% of your expected results.
Exactly. You're just sitting there looking at the screen thinking, wait, did I magically create new data out of thin air, or is something deeply, fundamentally broken in how I'm counting?
Yeah, and when the numbers exceed reality like that, it usually points to a fundamental mismatch between the mental model of the person asking the question and the mechanical reality of how the database actually stores information.
Which is terrifying for an
Oh,
analyst.
it's a nightmare because you instantly know your primary measurement tool has a massive blind spot.
Which is exactly what we are unpacking in today's deep dive. We're looking at this really fascinating technical postmortem, some developer notes centered on a very sneaky data illusion.
Right, the double counting bug.
Yes. Our mission today is to explore this specific double counting bug inside MemGraph and really any database that relies on Cypher, which is the standard query language for navigating graph databases.
Yeah, Cypher is pretty much the industry standard there.
Right. So this bug completely skews a health metric called typedness. And ironically, the root cause comes from a feature designed to make graph databases far superior to traditional ones, which is multi-labeling.
Yeah, to really understand the trap here, we have to contrast how graph databases organize information against, the older relational databases most people are used to.
Like standard SQL tables.
Exactly. In a traditional database, you have these rigid tables. A piece of data, an entity, usually sits in one specific row in one specific table.
It's definitively one thing.
Right. If you want it to be two things, you have to build these really complex junction tables to link it across categories. But graph databases, they just do away with that rigidity.
Because tables don't really exist in the same way, right?
Exactly. Instead, you have individual nodes. And you can apply multiple labels to a single node simultaneously.
So, like in a system like MemGraph, I might have a node representing a specific strategy. I can label that node as a decision, but I can also label it as a pattern, like it carries both tags at the exact same time.
And maybe it's also a tool. This multi-labeling gives you an incredibly rich data set. I mean, it mirrors the real world where things are rarely confined to just a single mutually exclusive category.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you can query the graph with immense flexibility. But while that flexibility is brilliant for writing search queries, it creates a massive mathematical vulnerability for anyone trying to measure the overall categorization of their data.
Or the typedness, as they call it. And that vulnerability is exactly what tripped up the development team in the incident report we're dissecting today. The source notes actually call it the 88.4% illusion.
That's a great name for it.
Right. So to set the scene, the team was running an audit script to check their data categorization after they completed this massive operation they called a 7-batch fan-out.
Which sounds intense.
It does. Let's translate that for anyone not, building data pipelines all day. A fan-out is essentially a cascading update. You start at a central node and push updates outward to its connected neighbors, and then they push to their neighbors, fanning out across the network.
And running it in 7 batches indicates this was a heavy system-wide operation. I mean, they were systematically moving through the graph, analyzing tens of thousands of entities, and assigning them new categories in 7 distinct waves to manage the computational load.
Right. So after all that heavy lifting, the audit script spat out a typedness rate of 88.4%.
Wow.
Yeah, it claimed nearly 90% of their data had been successfully assigned a specific category, which sounds fantastic until you look at the reality of the system.
Because the team immediately flagged it as suspicious, didn't they?
They did. They knew their own architecture. They knew that after a recent fix to their pipeline, only about 12,262 entities had explicit instructions to be retyped.
So an 88.4% success rate across the whole graph was mathematically disproportionate to the operation they just ran.
Totally. I was reading this and trying to visualize how a computer makes that kind of elementary mistake. And, it reminds me of planning the catering for a massive
Oh,
conference.
I love this analogy.
Imagine you're hosting this huge event and you need to give a head count to the venue so you know how many meals to pay for. You look out at the crowd and you decide to count based on what people are wearing.
Okay, dangerous game.
Right. So you count 50 people wearing red shirts, Then you count 50 people wearing blue hats, you add those two numbers together, and you confidently tell the caterer, I have 100 guests.
And the catering bill is going to be incredibly painful. Because you're counting the clothes, not the people wearing them.
Exactly. There is a very high probability that some of those people wearing red shirts are also wearing blue hats. You counted the same human being twice, simply because they fit into two different descriptive categories.
You summed the attributes instead of counting the unique individuals.
Yes.
And when we map that analogy to the actual numbers from the incident, the mathematical breakdown perfectly illustrates the flaw. The development team dug into their MemGraph database and found that the true baseline, like the actual number of unique entities that had been typed, was 6,547.
But the naive reporting script had returned a count of 7,750 typed entities.
Right. So if you take their inflated number of 7,750 and subtract the physical reality of 6,547, you're left with a phantom population of 1,203 extra labels.
And those extra labels came directly from entities holding two or three categories at once.
Exactly. An entity tagged as both a concept and a tool was being logged as two completely separate successes. The script was literally just executing a basic SEM addition across all the category totals.
Count the concepts, add the tools, add the patterns.
Yeah. In a traditional SQL database where tables are mutually exclusive, summing the counts of the tables actually does give you the total population.
Ah, so the developers brought an old relational database habit into a graph environment.
Precisely. They didn't account for the overlap, and as a result, they artificially inflated their success metric by a massive 12 percentage points.
Which is a completely understandable human error. You see a list of neat categories, you assume they act like separate buckets, and you just add up the contents.
Right, it's intuitive.
But here is where we get into the mechanics of fixing it, and where my initial assumption as an armchair developer was totally wrong. When I first read about this overlap problem, I thought there was a rather obvious workaround.
Oh, I'm curious to hear what your workaround was.
Well, if the problem is that multiple tags are causing double counts, we just need to isolate a single tag for the audit. If every entity in the database has a default starting tag, let's say everything starts its life labeled simply as an entity, why can't we just ask the database to ignore that first tag and only count whatever comes second?
Okay, I see where you're going.
Like in Cypher, if I ask the database for a node's labels, it hands me a list. The source notes refer to grabbing the second item in that list as labels n bracket 1. Just grab label number 2 for every node. No overlap, problem solved.
I mean, that is a very logical approach if you view the database as a standard text file. But it represents a massive anti-pattern that will silently corrupt your analytics over time.
Wait, really? Why?
Because the flaw in that assumption reveals a crucial detail about how graph storage actually manages memory under the hood. MemGraph and many similar graph systems does not guarantee label ordering.
I just assume that if I add the concept tag first and the pattern tag second, the database remembers that chronological order.
It doesn't. The database relies on what is called storage internal order. It's optimizing for storage density and retrieval speed, not for a human sense of chronological time. Yeah, so when MemGraph writes a label to a node, it assigns memory pointers based on what's available and how its internal hash tables are structured. So you could have two completely distinct nodes in your database with the exact same tags, entity, concept, and pattern.
Okay.
But when you run a query to fetch their labels, MemGraph just dumps the pointers it has. Node A might return its array as entity, concept, pattern, while node B returns concept, entity, pattern.
That completely breaks my script, because if I tell the system to blindly grab label number 2, for node A, it grabs concept, which is what I want, but for node B, it grabs entity, which is the default tag I was trying to avoid.
Exactly. The script pulls completely inconsistent data. And the most dangerous part of this anti-pattern is that the database won't throw an error.
It just quietly fails?
Yep. The syntax is technically perfectly valid. It will execute the query, and it will quietly return garbage data into your dashboard.
The silent failures are always the most destructive. So if we can't trust the position of a label in the array, how do we actually filter this data to get a true count?
You have to force the query to evaluate the actual values within the array, regardless of where they sit. The correct syntax the developers outline involves filtering the list to exclude the default label.
How does that look in Cypher?
It looks something like you use a list comprehension. You explicitly instruct the database, look through every single label attached to this node, sign the ones that do not literally spell the word entity, and return that filtered list.
Which naturally leads us to a foundational architectural rule from the source material, the base label convention. Because if we're going to filter out a default tag, we have to be absolutely certain that every node actually has one.
Right. The base label convention is the bedrock of keeping a complex graph sane. It dictates that every single entity in your database must receive one permanent base label upon creation.
Like the entity tag they used?
Exactly. That tag serves as the foundational identity of the node. The strict rule is that your data pipelines and typing processes can never, ever remove it.
So the node is born as an entity. And when our fanout process analyzes it, it doesn't transform it into a concept, it appends the new category. It becomes an entity that is also a concept.
And that permanence is what makes the final solution to the counting problem so elegant. If you strictly enforce that base label convention, you no longer need complex filtering to figure out if a node has been categorized. You just check the sheer volume of tags it holds.
Yes. This was my absolute favorite realization in the developer notes. Because if every node is guaranteed to have at least one label, finding out if it has been typed is incredibly simple.
You just ask the database about the size of the array.
Exactly. You just check if the size of the node's label array is greater than one. The syntax is literally just size of labels is greater than one.
Right. If the size is exactly one, it only has its base label, meaning it's untyped. If it has two or more labels, it has been categorized.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it has two labels or 20 labels, that node triggers a true condition and counts as a single successfully typed entity.
It bypasses the multi-label overlap completely, which establishes the golden rule of graph metrics highlighted in the postmortem. Typedness must always equal the distinct count of typed entities divided by the distinct total of all entities.
You have to force the database to count unique individuals. Never use a huum of label instances to represent your population.
Okay, so fixing the dashboard is a relief, but the implications of this double counting bug extend far beyond a single typedness metric, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because if the core mechanics of how we count overlapping categories are flawed at the script level, we have to consider what happens when that flawed logic feeds into advanced algorithms.
Yeah, the developer notes walk through a pretty alarming ripple effect across several major graph algorithms. Let's start at the local level with hub detection.
That's the process of finding the most central, highly connected nodes in your network, right?
Correct. Usually you evaluate a hub by counting its degree, the total number of edges or relationships coming in and out of the node. If a node has 100 connections, it's a hub. But in a complex graph, you often want to run a label filtered degree check.
Like asking, how many connections to concept nodes does this entity have?
Exactly. And here's where the overlap strikes again. If the relationships themselves can carry multiple types, meaning the connection between two nodes has multiple descriptive tags, your algorithm might count the same physical connection twice.
Oh, man. So the algorithm evaluates a moderately connected node, sums the overlapping relationship tags, and falsely flags it as a massive critical hub.
Yep. You end up optimizing your system around nodes that aren't actually central to the network. They just have highly descriptive, multi-labeled connections.
So local importance is totally distorted, but algorithms usually look at groups. What happens when we zoom out to community detection? The source mentions Leiden and Louvain, which are clustering algorithms used to group nodes into communities based on how tightly connected they are.
The interesting thing here is that the algorithms themselves, Leiden and Louvain, optimize for something called modularity. They iteratively move nodes between groups to find the densest possible clusters.
So the algorithm itself doesn't fail.
Right. At the node level, they're perfectly unambiguous. A node is definitively placed into community A or community B. The algorithm doesn't break. What breaks is the human reporting layered on top of it.
Because once the algorithm builds community A, we humans want to know what's inside it. We want a label-wise community distribution report. We ask the system to summarize the community by summing up the labels inside it.
And the red shirt, blue hat problem happens all over again at the cluster level. The summary report might state that community A contains 500 concepts and 500 tools.
And stakeholders reading that report will naturally assume there are 1,000 entities in that community.
Exactly. The multi-label overlap corrupts the distribution model, making the community appear vastly larger or more diverse than it physically is.
Which scales the error up to the neighborhood level. But what about the global network? The notes specifically call out PageRank. If I remember correctly, PageRank evaluates the importance of a node based on the fractional influence or votes passed to it by its neighbors.
Yeah.
How does multi-labeling disrupt something that mathematical?
It happens when developers use label-filtered projections. Often, you don't want to run PageRank on your entire database. It's just too computationally expensive. So you extract a subgraph, a projection, based on specific labels.
You tell the algorithm, only run PageRank on these particular categories.
Right. And if a node possesses two labels that are valid for that projection, it can literally be instantiated as two separate nodes within the algorithm's virtual matrix.
Wait, let me make sure I understand the mechanics of that. It physically duplicates the node in the algorithm's memory.
Yes. In that specific projection, it exists as multiple distinct entities.
Oh, that's wild. So if PageRank is about distributing a limited amount of global voting power across a network, and a multi-labeled node is participating twice, it's artificially inflating the denominator.
Exactly.
The algorithm thinks there are more participants sharing the global rank, which dilutes the influence of the normal nodes and over-concentrates power onto the multi-labeled duplicates. It's essentially funneling network authority to the wrong places.
That is a perfect articulation of the impact. The math behind PageRank relies on a precise matrix of probabilities. When you unknowingly inject phantom duplicate nodes into that matrix, the resulting ranks become entirely untrustworthy.
Let me throw one more modern pitfall at you, because the source touches on search logic and, you know, vector databases are everywhere right now.
They really are.
If I am building a search tool on top of this graph and I want to filter my results to only search through concepts, my instinct is to write a query that says where node.label equals concept.
Which would be a fatal error for any node carrying multiple labels.
Because it's doing an exact string match.
Precisely. The syntax node.label equals concept asks the database if the entire label array is exactly equal to that single string. If a node's array is entity and concept, the exact match fails. The database simply passes over it.
It's too rigid.
Yeah. To handle multi-label arrays, you have to abandon exact matching and use a membership check. The correct syntax is where concept in labels as in. You are asking the database, does this specific word exist anywhere within the list of tags attached to this node?
It's a subtle change in syntax, but the business consequences are huge. I mean, if you use the exact match, you might build a search function that you think is querying your whole system, but it is silently ignoring your most valuable, richly categorized, multi-labeled data.
And this cascading theories of vulnerabilities is why the development team documented a specific set of reusable rules and complementary patterns. It isn't enough to just fix the cipher query. You have to implement data hygiene practices at the architectural level to prevent these logic gaps from reopening.
Let's synthesize those hygiene rules for everyone listening, because they form a really robust checklist you can apply to any complex data environment. What is the primary preventative measure for developers writing these audit scripts?
The absolute core mandate is to define a label hierarchy constants list. When you write external audit scripts, say, in Python to interact with your database, you must maintain a single centralized list of your official labels: concept, pattern, decision, tool.
Keep it all in one place.
Right. Your code should iterate its checks dynamically from that central list. The source explicitly warns against hard-coding string names directly into your cipher queries.
Because taxonomies inevitably change over time. If the business decides next quarter that the tag concept should actually be called idea, and you've hard-coded the word concept into 50 different audit scripts,
you now have 50 silent failures.
Exactly. But if you use a centralized constant, you update the word in one place, and the entire architecture adapts.
The logic remains sound even as the vocabulary shifts.
I also noticed a very practical rule regarding tag cleanup in the notes. The team established a strict threshold for rare labels. If a specific tag exists on fewer than 10 entities in the entire global database, you get rid of it.
Yeah, graph databases are highly susceptible to tag bloat. Because adding a new label is so easy, developers and users tend to create incredibly niche categories that are only ever applied once or twice.
It just dilutes the analytics.
It does. The rule forces you to either merge those rare tags into a broader taxonomy or dump them into a generic catch-all bucket like other specific. Keep the graph dense and meaningful.
But consolidating rare tags doesn't solve the problem of legacy tags that the business stops using entirely. What's the protocol for handling a category that is officially retired?
Life cycle management requires explicit action. If a label is deprecated, you cannot rely on human discipline. You can't just tell your team to stop using it. You have to execute an explicit script to aggressively remove it from the database using the remove:\old_label command.
Because if you leave legacy labels floating around attached to old entities, they'll inevitably get swept up in future multi-label overlap errors.
Exactly. They'll just dirty your historical metrics.
All of these architectural rules make total sense, but I have to share my absolute favorite takeaway from this entire document. It's not actually a technical rule or a piece of code. It's a psychological reporting tip directed at the people building the dashboards.
Oh, you're referring to the explicit multi-label visibility rule.
Yes. The developers mandated that whenever you generate a label distribution report designed for human stakeholders to read like a bar chart or a pie chart, you must always explicitly include a visual row or a prominent note that states the exact percentage of multi-labeled entities.
Why do you think they felt that visual explicit note was so necessary?
Because humans are visual creatures burdened with built-in biases. If you hand a manager a bar chart with one column for tools and one column for concepts, their brain automatically processes those visual columns as completely separate, disjointed physical spaces.
They'll mentally stack the height of the two bars together to gauge the total volume of data.
Exactly. But by explicitly forcing an overlap or multi-label metric onto the page, you interrupt that psychological assumption. You are proactively reminding them, hey, some of the physical volume in bar A is also taking up space in bar B.
It perfectly highlights that data engineering isn't solely about writing mathematically sound code. It is fundamentally about communicating complex, overlapping reality accurately to the people making decisions based on your data.
So to summarize the journey we've mapped out today, multi-labeling in graph databases is an incredibly powerful paradigm that allows us to model the true overlapping complexity of the real world.
But if you try to measure that advanced complexity using basic relational style addition relying on a naive SUM, you will inevitably end up double counting your data.
Inflating your metrics and corrupting your most advanced algorithms.
Right. The foundational fix requires a shift in architecture and mindset. It relies on implementing a permanent base label convention, so every node has a definitive identity.
And from there, you must strictly evaluate arrays by value, not by internal storage order.
And you must religiously use distinct counting to evaluate unique entities rather than total label instances.
The ultimate takeaway for you listening to this applies far beyond just writing cipher queries in MemGraph. Whether you are a database engineer, a marketing analyst looking at customer overlap, or a sociologist mapping community traits, understanding how your tools measure overlap is the only way you can actually trust your metrics.
Because if you don't know exactly how the machine counts the data, you don't know what the numbers actually mean.
And if you don't know what the numbers mean, every decision downstream of that dashboard is compromised.
Absolutely.
Which brings us to a really fascinating broader thought to leave you with. This entire deep dive started with a very specific technical database bug regarding how we count categories, but it points to a much larger philosophical issue about how we document the world. When we assign multiple labels to complex things in real life, like a person who is simultaneously a customer, an employee, and a shareholder, or a patient who has asthma and allergies, are our everyday counting systems naturally biased to overrepresent complexity?
That's a great question. We constantly invent new boxes to categorize reality, but reality persistently refuses to stay confined to just one box.
So as you navigate your work this week, take a hard look at the algorithms, the dashboards, and the reports shaping your professional landscape. It's not voter fraud. It's just a naive census taker adding up all the homeowners and all the parents and concluding the town has twice as many people as it actually does. Ask yourself, how many times might you be getting double counted? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.